Polarization isn't new, but the way it's shaping our lives today feels more intense than ever. In this episode, the second of two, we bring together scholars, journalists, and community leaders from the Carter School at the George Mason University to explore how division takes root in our societies and what it will take to move forward, from classrooms and civic spaces to global conflicts and everyday relationships. Our guests examine the roles of empathy, trust, education, and the human connection in addressing polarization. They remind us that this challenge isn't abstract, it's personal, and it shows up in how we talk, listen, and engage with one another. This conversation is about hope, responsibility, and the small but powerful steps we can take right now to rebuild trust, strengthen relationships, and begin bridging divides.
Polarization is not new. It just looks different today. Rafiki, do you think we have tools to deal with polarization?
That is the journey I hope to embark on. No, we don't, but at least we've come a long way identifying how it works, what it is. But we have ways to go forward. We have tools, but I'm worried about how our societies minimize compassion, empathy. Mm. My group is a victim. We have to fend for ourselves. The tools are there, but we have to work hard to go back to school, go back to the same way we fight over concepts as powerful as democracy.
Yeah.
The same way should words and concepts like empathy, compassion resonate.
Yeah.
People be absorbed by understanding it. So I go back to education, contact hours, in-person meetings, town hall conversations, less digital spaces where my physicality is not challenged. I start there.
I love that. Now, I'm going to throw a fireball into the fire real quick. I just want to take a step back because, Rafiki, you touched on something. You talk about empathy and compassion. Today, what do you think the role of apathy has played as we talk about polarization?
Apathy is connected. If people are distrustful of systems, mm-hmm. in a democracy, mm-hmm. that distrust is the prelude for the disintegration of the system. Randy says it's a self-fulfilling, self-reinforcing process where and so many polls have shown the highest level of distrust of Congress, highest level of distrust of the Supreme Court, highest level of distrust of the presidency. What does that mean for being a citizen, which ideally requires respectful participation and trust in the system, as opposed to seeking to tear everything down? Trust is probably the most important precondition of peaceful change, even with respectful disagreement of issues.
I agree.
If we come back to school, we are at a university, more work on critical thinking and so having generations going back to helping young generation to be critical thinkers is crucial. And to work together, to be in a room together and have a task and go through a task together and build together. It's very simple, small things.
Yeah.
But those are game changers. A group of young people receiving a task from a teacher and work it out and come up with a unified or critically, constructively disagreed solution, that's difficult.
One teaching technique that has been shown to be effective is to have students be exposed to horrific conflicts of the past. Mm-hmm. So museums, basically that display the horrors
yeah.
of, let's say, the Holocaust, mm-hmm. and museums that display the horrors of Rwandan genocide that occurred in 1994. So there's been lots of evidence that shows when people look at that and they ask such a simple but profound question, how could that have happened with a good teacher or museum instructor? What does this mean about your society right now and what you and your participation?
I think when we ask those questions, it forces us to take action so it's not repeated.
Exactly.
So
I think also we have to be measured about how we're talking about these issues with young folks who are going to take charge of our society in the future.
Yeah.
And sometimes I do worry a bit that we have said, we've made a mess of this, but we have the next generation to fix it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, as Dan had mentioned, the epidemic of mental health crisis is hitting young people
yeah.
really hard. And their sense of competitiveness that they have to be extraordinary, I think, as Rafiki was talking about, that they have to do amazing things just to get accepted to college.
Yeah.
The idea that a young person has to start a nonprofit to be able to get into a top-tier university puts so much pressure on kids. Some people say Generation Greta because they saw a very young person making a very big difference and were like, go do that. No, also have a childhood. Work on personal relationships with friends. We underestimate the power of immediate personal relationships. There was a class that I took last semester that was focused on this amazing professor, Tehama Lopez-Bunyasi, here at the Carter School, on how to engage in democracy. And it ended up with each of us spinning up a campaign for office. It was a bit intimidating to
yeah.
get there, but she did a great job of scaffolding. The first assignment, or one of the very first assignments was, gather together two people who don't know each other, choose your friends, and have a conversation. It doesn't have to be about politics or anything serious. Just make one new social connection. And that was a powerful starting place. I talked to a professor at the University of Maryland in our Delta network of educators in the DMV area who are working on polarization. And she actually had a really interesting perspective about young folks. It is so important that we get young folks involved early in civic education, and there's a lot of that going on. We should be doing more of it. But also, we should be, like I said, encouraging them to have a childhood. Jonathan Haidt has done a lot of work on getting phones out of schools, and I think that's
yeah.
a good start. But she was telling me how her daughter was part of a generation that feels these forces from technology changing the way they relate to one another,
mm-hmm.
and they are scared.
Yeah.
And they are trying to do something about it. And she said her daughter and her friends get together on a weekly basis. They throw aside their phones and they just gather face to face, in person, just without technology.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that this generation who is most directly affected by this is
yeah.
sensing that and wants to do something about it.
Yeah.
That gives me hope.
And it should. We're dealing with so much, so being able to strip away those things at our fingertips, even for a moment, to have true connection, to find common ground, to really get to know people, to understand people, I think makes a huge difference, especially for this generation. We can't really leave it up to the next generation. We have to help the next generation because we created it.
My generation created it.
So I know polarization has a million and one dimensions, right? How do you see these many dimensions coming into play today?
They are reinforcing polarization in conjunction with these forces of isolation, as Randy said, separation, division. And what we need, basically, to overcome that, and there are many practices, as Randy pointed out, one that begins simple and small, we need to rehumanize each other and ourselves. It begins with being in person with another person in your group. It begins in positive, in seeking positive relationships with another community. Mm-hmm. It can expand to humanizing the other. There's not a quick solution. It's a long-term process from where we are now to what we need to overcome this. But there are techniques. These forces of polarization are the preconditions of despair and distrust. So we need to consciously, and people be aware, how do we overcome that? And one way, and there are many techniques, we can talk about this, obviously, one way is to promote curiosity in the other. So it sounds simple and easy. It is not easy for a lot of people to be sincerely curious about the lives of their adversaries.
Maybe not even an adversary, but a neighbor.
Even their neighbor.
Yeah.
To be sincerely curious. And it doesn't require immediately jumping into the heated issue about, there's a long list of issues. It basically requires a mindset of, I'd like to know, how are you doing? How's your family? How's your mother or your son? And this is obviously a kind of humanization, a little element of this.
Yeah.
So fostering sincere curiosity, an element towards fostering the health of the country.
I agree. Now, Rafiki, in your work as a journalist exploring other nations and communities, how does polarization manifest itself? And I think you touched on this briefly, but how does polarization manifest itself in other places?
If we go back to simple things that people are worried about in other parts of the world, in Europe, people are worried about immigration. In different parts of Africa, people are worried about resources. Will we get water tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Countries will fight over the Nile. Who owns the Nile? Whose water? Whose water? Who needs the Nile more than others? Who should benefit from the waters of the Nile is a big question. Which ethnic group is superior or should have more resources than others because we are the majority and you are the minority? Questions like that. It's okay to have worries, but then the problem is to come to a point where, number one, your worries are not aligned with the reality. Today, countries like Turkey, countries like Kenya have the biggest number of refugees, but our media will never tell you now and then that a country like Kenya in Africa has, or Uganda has, a huge number of refugees. You will have European countries worried a lot about refugees and immigrants. It's okay to have that worry for all kinds of reasons, but it's a problem with when such a concern is taken out of reality. Somewhere else, actually, the biggest number of refugees are in Turkey or Uganda, not in your part of the world.
Yeah.
Polarizing views take a life of their own. That worries me because we come to a point where we don't remember where we started. Mm. What was the question? What are we fighting about? It has a life of its own. That you come to a point where a country XYZ in Europe, actually this problem, it's very serious in this African country or this part of the Middle East, more so than with us. I come from Rwanda, we talk about being the source of the Nile. Europeans will tell you they are the source of the Nile. We will start to claim something about the waters of the Nile. We haven't started to fight yet. Those are almost banal example, but we do that and go on until the point, when did we start? It's not just one part of the world that is facing polarizing issues. There are many, they have different faces, they have different They come in different reality in manifestation. But I think what we face, all of us, is that point.
Yeah.
When we cannot know what we are actually talking about, what is dividing us, how we can get out of it. Those diverging, entrenched, frustrated views have taken lives of their own. If those who still can try and go back, it is important to do. And so that is why, where I go back to where I started answering your question. I come from the extreme and I listen more than I give lessons, because mm-hmm. I struggle a lot with that reality of how to go back from the sense of superiority to being ordinary,
yeah.
and get out of humiliation.
That's a lot. And I think that goes back to when you spoke earlier about the group identities, how we think, how did you say it?
Dehumanizing.
Yeah.
So the process becomes so strong psychologically and socially towards polarization rather than solving problems.
Right.
It becomes the mindset of society. And sometimes it's not even conscious that their goal is polarization. Clearly, this is not a positive goal, but it's the inner and collective force to do that. On the other hand, I'm optimistic. I see so many contexts and so many places where people basically are not exhibiting this.
Yeah.
And if we look at the grand sweep of history, this goes up and down. We're at a very high point of intensity and polarization today in the United States. I'm optimistic because there are so many topics of agreement that Americans share. There's so many topics that we share for basically conforming and honoring the rule of law, mm-hmm. A shared commitment for governments that work well. Of course, there's mm-hmm. different opinions about what that means. There is shared values in a sense of personal responsibility,
yeah.
that if somebody breaks the law, that there should be a sense of some kind of accountability for that. And there's many circles and contexts in which the sense of overcoming differences is a goal. There's a number of conservative religious groups who are committed by their faith tradition to help immigrants in this country and to basically give them sanctuary, give them support, to show caring for immigrants. That's just one context for where I see hope.
Wow. I am not pessimistic either. My work here, among other things, and my interest, if I may say, is to look into the arts. I am very much encouraged by the amount of production, the music that is coming up in streaming platforms that are where lyrics and the content of music is addressing people's concerns today. And every time a society that is going through a tough time is able to deploy its artists
yeah.
and creators to talk about creatively about the issues the society is going through, it's a measure that is not very much out there, but it is coming up as a reference of how we know where we are and how we feel as a community. I think there is a lot of good poetry that is giving us the pulse of communities. There is a lot of good writing, conferences talking about peace. So the picture is not that bleak, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think we have to be hopeful because we all have a role, which leads me to, Randy, your work with the Braver Angels in California and D.C. How would you describe your work and what you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, it's about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It is about helping people understand one another better. So when you come into a Braver Angels workshop, for example, one of the primary rules is nobody is here to change anybody else's mind. We are here to understand one another and find common ground. People underappreciate how much common ground there is. There's so much we agree on. There's been a lot of studies about this. A group called More in Common that has studied this extensively and has said there's this great perception gap about extremism and beliefs of the other side. We really have to recognize that, and to Dan's earlier point about taking a public health approach, there are lots of organizations that want to help educate the public about their skewed perceptions. Braver Angels is very supportive of that. They want to just get people in the same room together and understanding one another. And they also recently launched an initiative that is called Courageous Citizenship. And it was in the wake of the murder of Charlie Kirk, emphasizing the point that we are better than this. There's so much potential for humanity to express their love for one another and interest in one another's well-being that they are really emphasizing. First of all, focus on your internal response, on the way that you think about other folks, and trying to address things like stereotype thinking and making that the first step. And then their second principle is check on your people. Make sure that you are connected, as we said, to our neighbors and the folks in our communities. Put down your phone, grab dinner, knock on their door, ask for a cup of sugar, like that. And recognize our shared values, because we do share a lot. And then their fourth principle is seek reliable information. And that it comes back to trying to diversify our sources, what we really focus on and our media diet that on a regular basis.
Yeah.
If we seek out information that challenges our priors and expand that media diet, we can go a long way to step into the other person's shoes. That they have a great program called Walk a Mile that helps people exchange their news sources and understand that if I was seeing what they're seeing, I would feel very different. So those are some of the basic principles. In terms of communication, it's really about sparking curiosity and listening in a way where you're not coming up with your response while listening, trying to turn it off, and focus on, all right, it's like meditation. You constantly have to recognize your mind has wandered and come back. And when you're listening to someone else, when your mind wanders into, okay, what is my response? Just acknowledge that and try to come back to listening. And it will be a challenge. It's a challenge for literally everybody. But we can continue to practice it and continue to get better. And then when you speak in a way that it's easier for the other side to hear, think about the language that you're using and how that lands with somebody else. Because different language can be very affecting. We can spark somebody else's emotions with the language that we use, and we may not realize that.
Yeah.
So keeping that in mind and trying to use language that can really speak to where that person's coming from. So those are some basic tools. If we get our reps in and practice that on a regular basis, and it's hard. We have to come back to workshops on a regular basis. But these tools are available. There's a lot of nonprofits, not just Braver Angels.
Yeah.
There's so many organizations that are geared towards giving us those spaces to have these conversations. So I would definitely encourage people to look up those organizations, go to a meeting, and you may find yourself energized and more optimistic about the future.
And I think we're going to continue on this path. I am a strong supporter of finding common ground. To even have a conversation to find common ground, it starts with mutual respect. But we spend more time debating our differences instead of, and I think that adds to things being even more polarized, because we're not interested in seeing where we're, and We've seen it that we're more alike than we are. I want to do a quick lightning round with three questions. Are we ready?
Yes. Do it now. Go for it.
Okay, Dan, I'm going to start with you. We know that polarization is impacting everyone in all sectors. How do you approach this problem? How do you start?
I start with recognizing that we need to be more human with other people. We need to be more human with ourselves. Now, that may sound obvious, because we're all human beings, but we need other people. That we are nurtured by other people in many contexts. Of course, we are pained by other people, but it's important to recognize that. And we, from a practical standpoint, we need people to solve problems with us. The focus on the past and fact-checking with adversaries doesn't work to overcome these forces of polarization.
Yeah.
But what is much more effective is to recognize that we have a shared problem here. Children are sick, or the immigration is a problem, or poverty. We have a shared problem here. How do we together address the needs of the problem? It begins with treating someone else as a human being, which nurtures yourself.
Randy, if you were working on this problem, how would you approach it? What are the first steps?
It comes down to two things for me: curiosity and relationships. The importance of our relationships, not just with family, but with our neighbors and people we know through organizations, treating those relationships as gold. When we find something that where we have a difference, approaching that with curiosity, to emphasize, similarly to what Dan said, recognizing that it is our opportunity to add another perspective rather than a barrier to our goals.
That's important. Seeing it not as a barrier. Get rid of those walls so we can move forward. We all want the same things. I think we do.
There's so much we aspire towards, and so many obstacles to that. There's lots of shared values.
Yeah. Rafiki, so what other tools or approaches we can try?
So I think much has been already said, I think. But if I may share just a very brief observation. So when you have gone to the other extreme, trust me, human beings can go to extremes, and they have happened in the past. My observation is that those who come back from horrible experiences, those who survive, those who recover a sense of humanity, and there is a tendency to focus, spend a lot of attention and energy on not breaking things and not making things worse, and have less engagement and taking the back seat and let others do, because how bad things can become and how bad things can be. It leads me to realize how even small steps, leadership is not for very important or highly educated people. Leadership is also for ordinary people. Simple steps, going to see a neighbor and say, do you have an egg or do I can borrow? Daring leadership, not as complicated as it sometimes comes across. It's in the everyday reality that we dare to go to the next person. That's leadership too. You took an educated guess, not a risk, but initiative that will take you to the next step. I really want to think of leadership in this context as a key driver to take initiative, to dare hoping. That's basically what it comes to. Hope that, let's dare hope that we can get out of it.
And
that's leadership.
As leaders in our communities, homes, workplaces, I believe we're in a crisis. I think we've reached that level as it relates to this topic, right? So for the everyday person, the student, faculty member, doctor, grocery store clerk, what useful steps can we take in our own communities, in our homes, to help address this issue of polarization?
Most people are not extreme, and mm-hmm. most people are not hateful. Most do not want a whole group to live badly. That's a vast majority of people, as Randy was pointing out. There's a lot of common ground. Overcoming extreme polarization is to, first of all, recognize it.
We have to name it.
Is to name it
yeah.
as a threat to democracy mm-hmm. in the current condition. Not yeah. all polarization is like that.
Yeah.
There's many different kinds, but currently we have a threat to democracy. And to name it and to recognize it and to basically, as we're saying, to treat other people as human beings. We're not going to have a quick fix. It's not like take this medicine and see me in a month. It is going to be incremental. I know that's not exciting. That's one of the challenges.
Yeah.
Because through the online, being captive online, everyone, there needs to be a quick fix and a moment of pleasure. But in relationships with others and to promote that, not everything is going to go rosy, clearly. So what we're saying is not utopian. We're grounding this on lots of understanding, deep understanding of who people are and what people need. Basically, a vast majority of people need connection and exhibit a shared sense of values with other people.
I think that's important because we have to start somewhere, and I think there are a lot of us who may not necessarily be in this line of work of peace building, conflict resolution, academia, or even grassroots level, and may not understand where to start. Understanding what it is and what it means, we just know we're impacted by it. Thank you for sharing the ways we all play a part in this. In some cases, some of us contribute to it, but just taking an internal look at ourselves and seeing what role we play, how we can change our behavior, our actions, and how we connect and impact with people. But you know what? I want to bring on our silent partner. He's not really a silent partner, Rich, who's been with us doing the podcast. Rich, you've been listening in and taking all of this in. Do you want to share some thoughts about where we go from here?
Mercedes, this has been fascinating. You all have brought forward the idea of how to take apart that monolithic thinking. Polarization has ugly parts, but in your academic, practical work and your life experiences, you're telling us that we should have hope, that there are ideas, that there are ways that we can learn new ways in order to bring forth our relationships, to do our problem solving, to deal with not only dividing the water of the Nile, but divide the water of the Colorado. Mm-hmm. It is an experience that we're all having and all having to learn new ways to come out of the wake of the pandemic, the wake of this polarization, and the challenges of technology and AI. It's something we can cope with as long as we take this first step. It's about hope, relationships, and how we think and feel. These are solvable problems, partially because we made them, we can fix them. Mercedes, thank you for a beautiful job today. This was a fascinating discussion, and I hope this is one of many.
Thank you, Richard. It was a pleasure. Ricky, Dan, Brandy, thank you all for a conversation. I know we could probably go on for hours, but we can't. But I'm looking forward to coming back and talking about some other aspects of this and some other topics. Thank you for joining us.